Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that, well, I've just been giving you the title of the book. What's the other kind of smart? Well, today we're going to be able to share with you the details on what that is. We're going to find out that there are ways that you can boost your emotional intelligence for greater personal effectiveness and success. My guest is Harvey Deutschendorf. And Harvey, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. I'm glad to be on your show.
Well, it's a delight having you. Now, you're in Alberta, Canada, and you have worked as an emotional intelligence coach, and you've been doing this for over 10 years, and you are a certified administrator of the Baran EQI, which is the first scientifically valid test for emotional intelligence, approved by the American Psychological Association. Tell us more about this organization. Before your book, I had never heard about it.
Well, the Baran EQI was the first big test of emotional intelligence that was developed, and it was developed by a gentleman by the name of Reuven Baran, who is a Rhodes Scholar. He's an Israeli psychologist and had basically spent most of his life developing this test on emotional intelligence. And it was developed using over, I believe, 400 different tests, and it was developed all over the world, not just with one culture, in Nigeria, Germany, India, Philippines. So used various cultures to sort of verify the test, unlike the IQ test, which was basically done using a American, a college sort of crowd. Yeah. So the test was found to be valid by the American Psychological Association because it had passed whatever, you know, their requirements are to make a test scientifically valid. And I don't know exactly what they are, but they did recognize it because of all the background work that had been done on it.
Now, let me ask you a very direct question here. Was this something that was used in military applications first? Because I know that the military has often had extremely sophisticated tests when they will want people to be evaluated for certain job positionings. Is this something that is typically applied? Was this first brought into the military arena before it came out into the public arena?
Well, that's very interesting, Donna, because I have a very interesting story about the military and using this particular test. A number of years ago, the American Air Force had a problem with recruiting. Actually, it was with the recruiters, not the recruiting cells. They found that they would be spending about $30,000 training a new recruiter, and they found that in a year later they had lost 50% of their recruiters, and of course they had very sophisticated tools and everything, interview tools, to be able to try to in the interview to recruit recruiters. They didn't know what to do, so they called in a gentleman by the name of head of the multi-health systems in Toronto, who owned the right, Stephen Stein, yes, Dr. Stephen Stein, of an organization that owned the right to the Baran EQI test. And they asked him to come in and to see if he could help out. And what he did was he interviewed recruiters that were very successful. And this was easy to tell with recruiters, but success was easy to determine because the top recruiters had certain quotas. The top recruiters were able to make their quotas or even to exceed their quotas. Mm-hmm. And so he tested them. He administered this test to them. He also administered the test to the people who were failing their quotas by quite substantially. Found a big difference in a number of areas. Their independence, their empathy was very high, and their recruiters that were able to make their quotas. And the reason was that these people had to be out there on their own. They had to be able to handle rejection. A little side interest is that the people that were making or exceeding their quotas were also spending more time on the golf course. It's not that they were working harder. They were had certain attributes that made them more successful. So what they did, they put this test into the recruiting process, and the new applicants were administered this test. Not only that, but you know, they tweaked a few other things. But after that, they found out that they were keeping up to 83% of their new recruits, or the recruiters in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And that saved them a substantial amount of money, about $17 million. So the report went to Congress from the Air Force that they had found this tool that was so effective, and then Congress went ahead and they ordered this tool to be used in all aspects of the military. So it's become quite widely used, and it's had quite a boost because of that, proven to be so effective.
Now, one of the comments that you make in your book, The Other Kind of Smart, is that women have the higher emotional quotient ratio than men do, and also that this is something that is not necessarily that you're born with. This is something that people develop throughout their lives. Am I correct?
Okay. Women have higher emotional quotient in certain areas, like empathy and being healthy relationships, being able to develop better relationships with others. Men, though, have a little bit higher scores in areas like stress tolerance, maybe areas like self-regard. So that's just an overall number that, you mm-hmm. know, individual men and women, of course, differ in those areas. But that was what sort of was found overall. But it wasn't found that there wasn't found to be really large differences. And I think a big part of the difference in sort of empathy and thing is that men have, you know, have never been allowed to really express their feelings and show their feelings. It's sort of something that society has determined.
Now, when we're talking about emotional intelligence, in today's world, as it actually always has been, but I think we're more mindfully aware of it at this time, when we're out there looking for employees, when we are looking for people that we want to work with, that particular aspect of personality, people skills, is something that is really very valuable. And not everybody's going to be very gregarious and outgoing and have all of this. But you bring up an issue about Southwest Airlines, and it's positive when you bring up the case study. And, of course, we all know that the people within an organization are what makes it work, because the organization cannot exist without people.
Right.
However, you said that the overall attitudes of management with Southwest Airlines is that when it came time for layoffs, when the airlines not all that long ago went through very, very difficult times and massive layoffs were occurring and this type of thing, they didn't want to work that way. They worked differently. And they said, what can, you know, their positioning was, how can we, as a company, as a team, how do we want to deal with it? How do we want to deal with it? And that is a mind shift that is pretty tough in the corporate environment for a lot of people to adopt.
Yes, basically, Southwest Airlines is probably the only organization that really comes out and says, our staff are number one, not customers. It's really our staff, and as a result, they have developed really good customer relations and good relationships with their suppliers by really putting their staff number one and really making their staff feel like they are important. They have a committee set up, a culture committee, that their only purpose of being in existence is to look for ways to make the staff feel like they're more part of the organization. And they also look for staff that are people-oriented, that are good team players, and some of those people may be outgoing, gregarious, and extroverts. Some of those people may be very, very quiet, but in their own way are very people oriented and are very have a the right kind of attitude. And when people are first hired at Southwest, they are given a mentor, somebody who helps them, somebody who does little things for them, is to help them ease their transition into the organization and make them feel special, do little things for them, whatever. And that's they go way beyond what other organizations do for their people. And as a result, they seem to get much more out of their people than other organizations do as well.
Because they feel like they're valued, and I think
they
that
feel
is
like they're
very
valued,
important.
And they're part of the family. And I mean, most organizations will say that they value their staff. You won't find an organization that says no, we don't care about our staff. They're all going to say that. But Southwest really, according to everything that I've heard about them, really does walk that talk. They really do care for their people, and their people very much do feel that they are part of a family.
Now, you state in your book that research in more than 200 companies and corporations worldwide suggested about one-third of the differences were due to technical skills and cognitive ability, while the remaining two-thirds were due to emotional competence. And you, in addition, said strong emotional competence distinguished star performers from average ones, which is what you initially said when you were talking about the military and the recruiters. So that just sort of comes a full circle. And you mentioned a company, L'Oreal, who found that when they gave these kinds of evaluations, when they were looking at hiring people, the individuals made $91,000 more annually than using other methods of hiring, which I think is just phenomenal.
Yes, it's quite the numbers when you look at them. Yeah, there's quite the difference.
Now, if someone is listening to the show today, and they're saying, "I really have a dilemma," and whether they're a small business, a large business, it doesn't make any difference. In today's economy, which is so difficult, and they're wanting to hire people, and they're wanting to do it, who would they go to? How would they find out about this test? And would they give it just as, do they have to have someone that can interpret it for them? I mean, how can this be utilized by a business person?
The test itself, a large organization could hire somebody that would be qualified to administer this test, and I suppose administer it to employees as part of the hiring process. That would take a little doing, but the people could do, if the company isn't large enough and sort of able to do that, is just to familiarize themselves more with the kinds of things to look for in emotional intelligence, and to maybe put some of those questions into the whole interview process. And, they don't have to go the whole route of going and administering this test, interpreting it, and sort of thing. And there is a book out there called The Emotionally Intelligent Interview by Adele Lynn. And it does offer a lot of help to any human resources people out there. Anybody that's doing interviewing will be able to get a lot out of that that will help them during the interview.
Well, that's very good. Okay, so that's the Emotionally Intelligent Interview by Adele Lynn.
Yes, A-D-E-L-L-E-L-Y-N-N.
Okay, great. Now, you bring up two words, and I found this intriguing, assertiveness and aggressiveness. And
right.
You say that they have become confused. How?
Well, there's assertiveness basically is putting up your boundaries, but not respecting, you know, keeping people from coming into your boundaries, but not respecting other people's boundaries. I think what aggressiveness is not respecting the boundaries of others. That's quite a different thing. And assertiveness, we can be assertive. We can protect our boundaries and still at the same time respect the boundaries of others. And the people who are assertive generally get respect. People who are aggressive can get their way a lot of times by being aggressive. But there is always a backlash. The people that, you know, they get their way by pushing into others' boundaries, those people will not be very happy about that. And you know, they will be always looking for a way to get back at these people. Assertive people respect others' boundaries, but they expect their boundaries to be respected as well.
You have a wonderful story in your book about a young woman whose name was Monica, or is Monica. And I'd love for you to share her story, because this is a powerful demonstration of how an individual can develop that assertiveness and really take charge of their life in a way that is going to empower them in just marvelous levels. Would you share Monica's story?
Sure. Monica basically grew up in a family that her father was very dominant, and the mother was sort of a bit of a wallflower, didn't really step in, and Monica was basically a tall girl. She was was sort of felt really sort of insecure and things like that, and she had an aunt, though. The aunt was very supportive of her. The aunt was single, and aunt had traveled around the world and things like that, and she had, the aunt sort of had taken Monica under her wing. She had two brothers, and the father wanted the brothers to go to school, increase their education. One became an engineer, the other one a dentist. But however, didn't want Monica to continue her education. So Monica wasn't really supported by her father at all, or she wasn't supported really by her mother. Her mother sort of didn't stand up for her, or, you know, support her anyway. So Monica started to hang around with her aunt and started to do things with her aunt, and she became very confident. She became went to school, and she started to really stand up to her father. She went out and she left home. She went to college. And during college, she realized in high school that she was quite good at sports, and this gave her a lot of self-regard. She started to feel very, very good about herself. Then after that, when she got out to college, I mean, she didn't have the support of her family or anything, but she became close to her coach, her basketball coach. She became part of the basketball team, and slowly she worked her way up and became very, very successful in life because of it, without having any real support. Was able to develop her own self-regard.
When you are sharing these various stories, and again, when we're talking about the other kind of smart, emotional intelligence is what you're referring to. Now, many would call it maturity. It's something we should be able to acquire as we grow older. But I've known people that actually were never able to get past certain aspects, and they were very, very much like children. Their emotional response patternings were stuck. That's the only way I know how to say it. They were stuck. And in your book, you have some very good suggestions for people to work through various things. And one of the chapters you have is related to independence. And independence is something that I know I cherish a great deal. And many people that I know cherish it a great deal. You want to really know that you can stand on your own two feet. Tell us how someone who wants to be independent but doesn't have that assertiveness, what steps they could take to be able to recognize that they have a right to be this way. And it doesn't mean being obnoxious, but what would you recommend to someone that might be listening right now that says, I want to be independent, but gee whiz, I don't feel this, I don't feel that. What would you say to them?
Okay, first of all, I would say every week do one thing for yourself by yourself. Choose something that you don't want to do by yourself, that you're maybe a little bit afraid to do. If you've never gone to a movie alone, you've never gone out and maybe for coffee or done anything, you need to go with a friend. Just go out and do it. If you have trouble making decisions at all, if you have to need other people's approvals, start making quick decisions on things that aren't all that important. Just go ahead and do it. When you go into a restaurant, look at a menu, give yourself a certain amount of time, 2 minutes, whatever, make a decision. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, when you've made a decision, write it down in a book, keep a book, and say, I've made this decision on my own. If you're afraid to speak up in a group, if you have an opinion that's different from everybody else's, if you're afraid to voice it, do it this week. Just speak up. It doesn't have to be anything that's drastic or anything that's far different. And if you're going out for lunch with the crowd at work or always go, try going alone. Try someplace different. Don't go to the same place. And after a month of that, sit down and look at what that feels like for you, how things are starting to change for you.
I think that is so important. We need to, and it's a journey, we need to really recognize that each and every one of us as individuals, there is that communal part that we want in our lives, but we need not to be afraid of who we are. I like one of your quotes in your book by American psychologist Rollo May, and this is how it reads. It requires greater courage to preserve inner freedom, to move on in one's inward journey into new realms, than to stand defiantly for outer freedom. It is often easier to play the martyr than to be rash in battle. And I think that is very, very true. And so many times people will put on a demonstration outwardly, and inwardly, they're just shaking like a leaf. Now, there's an area in your book called social responsibility, and I'll quote from this, too, because I really like this. This is by former U.S. President Woodrow Wilson. You're not here to make a living. You're here to enable the world to live more amply with greater vision and with a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You are here to enrich the world. You impoverish yourself if you forget this errand. Those words are extremely powerful, and I think if we could all post them up on a mirror and look at them and realize that each and every one of us have this journey that we're supposed to go through, and it's ours, and we're going to meet a lot of people along the way, then that accountability factor comes in, and I think that's one of the weakest points in our society at this time is being accountable. Talk about socially responsible people. With this chapter, what did you want to really emphasize?
I wanted to, well, what I wanted to emphasize, Donna, was that social responsibility is really essential to it gives us some purpose in life. We need a purpose that's bigger than ourselves, beyond ourselves, for us for our lives to really have any meaning. And it's also related it's people that are socially responsible that do things for others are people that are happier, because in life, and you know, we know that. And so there is a greater purpose to us being here than just our own little world, our own little needs. And yeah, anybody that's contributing, that's doing something for others, making the world a better place to live, is a person that is happier, is more fulfilled, and is a person that's more successful in their own world as well.
You mention, again, Southwest Airlines quite a bit through the book. Let's talk about problem solving, because this is something many times that's very discouraging for people. And I think having confidence is something that, again, with maturity, that we are going to recognize that we can do it. I think of a young woman that I knew who had married someone who was very, very strong, quite a problem solver, and she found that though she was married to this quote-unquote problem solver might come up with some solutions, but the action didn't follow. And so she decided all of a sudden she was going to do it. And she had been taught that as a female that it was supposed to be a guy thing. And she found that it didn't take her long to figure out she didn't want to wait for the guy to do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
So she developed the skills of problem solving. And there's many different levels to problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Sure there is. And there's we can become better problem solvers. And what it does is take practice, and we need to expand different solutions to problems. How I do that is I practice, and I suggest that in the book, is practice problem solving by anticipating problems and looking for solutions. I mean, a good example of this was I had thought before, if I'm on my way to an important meeting, what happens if my car breaks down? Okay, and because of that, I carry with me the phone number of a taxi company, of a towing company, and also before I have to go to any meetings, I have the phone number of that meeting, and because I've anticipated that, it did happen to me, I was much better prepared. But not only that, we know we can't anticipate all problems. We probably can't anticipate a lot of them, but because of that, it practicing that makes us more confident that when problems do come up, we will be able to solve them. And because we are more confident, we will be more relaxed, we'll be able to think clearer, and we'll become better problem solvers. It'll become, overall.
Now, I know we're just about out of time now. In the back of your book, you have a mini emotional intelligence quiz, and people can take this, and then there are those evaluations at the back. I think that this is a fascinating perspective. It is one that makes us aware that with understanding ourselves and with being aware of how to deal with reality and other things, we can be, well, we can feel like we're more functional, like we really can do what we want to do in our lives. The other kind of smart, simple ways to boost your emotional intelligence for greater personal effectiveness and success, to go to his website, it is theotherkindofsmart.com. It really makes for interesting reading. If you're someone that's fascinated with psychology and you want to find out about a different aspect, a different paradigm, I think you might be quite interested in this book, The Other Kind of Smart. Harvey, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Donna. I've enjoyed being on your show very much.
Well, it was a delight having you. I wish you continued success. And is there more testing that maybe somebody could do on your website of theotherkindofsmart.com?
Well, I do have the information on if they want to do an official test like the bar on EQI of how to find those tests like that, yes.
Great. Okay. TheOtherKindOfSmart.com. Check it out. All of you are so web-savvy, I think you might find it quite fascinating. Again, Harvey Deutschendorf has been my guest. It has been a pleasure. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. You can call me on 888-815-9756. That's a worldwide toll-free number for you to call into, 888-815-9756, and I'll be delighted to give you an intuitive reading on the air. Also, I wanted to mention again, you're going to be hearing me say this all the way up to the 21st of November, I am going to be appearing at the Dickens Festival in downtown Tacoma, Washington. And this is a family event, and I'm so excited about doing this. It's so much fun, and I always enjoy interacting with those of you that come out. So if you'd like to come out, have a mini session with me, then I'm going to be available at King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma from 11 in the morning until 4. Also, part of the proceeds that I will be receiving for the consultations will be going towards a charity that the Dickens Festival Group has designated this year. So if you want more information, then go to dickensfestival.net, and you'll find all kinds of details, tell you about the events, all the activities going on, and what's available for the kids, the adults, etc., and the locations for all of it. You will have a great time. Last year it snowed, and it was absolutely magical. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, in doing this show, as those of you who are regular listeners know, I read about 400 to 600 books a year. When I came across this study by Sam Gosling, he's a psychologist, He said, the type of book you prefer to read reveals your tastes and values, and the stories you identify with can show what you hope for in your own life. And this is what was broken down. So if you're a book reader, as I am, this is something that I think you'll find fascinating. Now, if you like thrillers, mysteries, well, you're an outgoing risk taker. And you really like solving things, and you just get really excited. Well, I guess I'm one of those because I enjoy that. And it said, when you're pushing the envelope, that's what you really, really like. And you have, well, a high tolerance for risk, and you're virtually anxiety-proof. And then, what if you like biographies or memoirs? Well, you're an independent alpha. Why? Because if you're a person that really likes reading about men and women that triumph over obstacles, it reflects your leadership skills and the fact that you believe you have your own destiny to fulfill. Also, if you like that type of subject matter, you show your respect for the out-of-the-box concepts. You're not afraid to be different. In other words, you like to read about people who have their own ways of doing things because you resonate with that. You really can empathize with what they go through. So you will perhaps create your own path to success that can't be found on anybody else's map. Now, what if you're a romance person? Oh, you just love those romances. Well, he says you're an imaginative empath. Right? Because you tend to score high on personality tests measuring for warmth and understanding. And it is this heightened ability to empathize that allows you to identify with the storylines and living what's in that romance novel. So you feel everything intensely, and because of that, your life probably is just as colorful as your favorite fiction. Science fiction. Fantasy. You're an open-minded conformist. To really enjoy science fiction or fantasy, you have to be able to feel that plot, really get into it, and believe that the impossible is possible. That means you have brain power that's running counter to the normal way of thinking. You like being receptive to different points of view. Doesn't mean you just listen. You actually like to take the information in, evaluate it, and then see if it's worth changing your mind after you make your evaluation. You know what? You're really one of those people that's called a left-brainer. Why? Because you want to follow a logical patterning. If you're a Star Trekker like I am, it's a good thing. I like that. Now, if you like just about anything and everything, you like the cookbooks, you like this, you like that, you like the other. You are a curious wit. How about that as a description? Isn't that a cool description? Diversity is the key to intellectual curiosity, and that is the truth. When you have all of these variables in your library, when you want to explore all kinds of different things, that means that you are a person that loves to learn. You have a unique combination of creativity and logic, and you like being exposed to as many different types of thinking and people as possible because you want those individual ideas that nobody else has. The result, and I know we've got a caller, we'll be going right to the caller shortly. If you like just about anything, you've got a mental arsenal of information that you're going to be able to draw upon at any time when you need to make a point. And you always know that you can learn more because you are enlightened enough to realize that sharing your expertise is the best gift you can give because you have a balanced approach to life. I like that. I think that's pretty good, those assessments of that type of reading ability. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Rebecca, and I'm calling from the Bay Area. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully, Rebecca. Is it foggy down your way, or is the sun shining?
No, it's kind of overcast today.
It's fall time of the year, and I know the Bay Area can sometimes just get that heavy fog that rolls in, but it's got a magic to it. I don't know. There's just something magical about the Bay Area when the fall time of the year comes in. It's just
uh-huh.
mesmerizing. I love being down on the water in the early morning when you have that fog that comes in. I have very fond memories
exactly,
of that.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, it's a great feel. Just wonderful. Okay, Rebecca, let's get down to business with you. The first thing I'm looking at is you've got your work cut out for you. This is not going to be a lazy daisy rest of the year. You have really decided you are going to put yourself on a treadmill type of a patterning because you're wanting to get things done. Now, I'm not seeing you trying to do 5 miles an hour, but I'm seeing you saying, I've got these objectives, I really want to meet them, I'm going to have to be consistent, and I have to be willing to do what is necessary to get things done. And I am seeing a highly disciplined patterning with you that I think is just absolutely marvelous. The only thing I want you to do is to be a little bit more flexible. I don't want you to be so hard on yourself, where you are going to feel like, oh, I've stepped off the wagon, I'm just in deep trouble here. No, you're not. You may find there's going to be some interferences because of the holidays coming up and some various things, but just stick with your objective. You're going to go into the month of January of the new year, 2010, and you'll see how much you actually will have accomplished. So keep moving. Keep on doing. And set your objectives down. If you have a whiteboard or a blackboard or a cork board, something where you can say, this is what I'm looking at for week number one, week number two, and really stand back after you make your list and say, is this realistic? Have I got some flexibility in this? Because if I'm delayed, if something happened where I had to take the car into a shop, if I couldn't give this absolute commitment every day, then how am I going to manage it? So your concentration and your discipline is very well placed. Just have that little bit of flexibility in there. Once you've got that down, I'd say go for it. Get on that treadmill of determination and just be consistent. It may be monotonous at times, but just be consistent and you'll reach your objective. What did you want to ask me about, dear?
Well, actually, I was going to ask you when things are going to start to calm down because everything is just, you know, up in the air right now, taking the car into the shop and not having it done right, needing to take it back, and just, you know, that's just one thing of many on the to-do task list
mm-hmm.
for me to be able to move forward. And so it sounds like you kind of answered my question already about, you know, it's going to be kind of a hairy or, you know, an up and down thing till after the first of the year.
Absolutely. So just look at what needs to be done. And
okay.
It's not slowing down. I'm not seeing it slowing down at all.
Okay.
So you just need to say, all right, if that's the case, then how do I manage it so that I'm not going to get my emotions all in a dither? Now, one of the things...
Okay, kind of reminds me of what that guy was saying, like having a plan B.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Very much so.
I also just wanted to give a shout-out to all the veterans today, because today is Veterans Day.
Oh, I'm so glad you did that. I am so glad you did that. Because
thank you for all their service that they've done, and mm-hmm. especially with events going on now and Fort Hood and everything, that they're just greatly appreciated.
They really are, and I have been given, I just received a wonderful, wonderful memorial. There's a gentleman by the name of Ron Clancy, who has been a guest on my show, and he's probably going to be coming up in December again as a guest. And he put together the most wonderful memorial film that you can see on YouTube. Now, I don't have the code, but if you look up Ron Clancy, he is an author as well as a developer of music and this type of thing. And this is just a phenomenal phenomenal movie on YouTube. It's about 12 minutes long, and it is absolutely first class, totally dedicated to the men and women of the military services. So I agree with you. I think that it's so important to recognize them and to realize, too, that if you have a member of the military in your family, please take the time, if they will do it with you, sit them down because they are in their 80s now.
Mm-hmm.
Many of
mm-hmm.
them from the Second World War. There are those that are from the Vietnam War, the Korean War. I mean,
mm-hmm.
war goes on forever. But if you can sit mm-hmm. down with them and interview them
mm-hmm.
and get their stories. I've got some veterans that are going to be coming up on the show in a short time. And it's so important to do this because these men and women have experienced things that most of the American people have not a clue about. And
exactly.
their time was different. And they
exactly.
need, their stories need to be heard. They really do
exactly.
need to be heard and remembered. And that's why
I know there's a documentary coming out next month about
mm-hmm.
one of the survivors from Iwo Jima when the flag was raised.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
I'll send you the information on that as well. So.
Oh, please do, Rebecca, because I think that that's important. But this is Veterans Day, and for all of you men and women that have had family members involved, who have had to deal with the challenges after the people came home, and for those of you that have served, there is so much that you need to know that is appreciated about what you have done. And I think the families of those members of the services give so much themselves because it's very
They
very
do.
Difficult.
They keep the home fires burning for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
Thank
really
you so
something.
Much, Donna.
You are
really
very welcome,
it.
Rebecca. I appreciate you for calling. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to call in and chat with me, the number is 888-815-9756. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment, and then we'll be right back. If you want to give me a buzz, we'll be chatting.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Rebecca, I'm so glad she brought up the remembrance of the veterans. I have in front of me a story by Mike Perkins. He's from Tremonton, Utah. He was a captain in the United States Army in Vietnam. He said, I graduated high school in 1959, and like most guys, I went to college, but I realized after a term at Brigham Young that this wasn't for me, so I went to work in the natural gas fields in New Mexico, then went up and worked in Spokane, Washington, where they were building Atlas missile sites. I did that for about a year and a half and finally said, I'm going nowhere with my life. So I decided to go to San Francisco and wanted to go out on a merchant marine ship, but you had to belong to the Seamen's Union. I went down to the Seamen's Union, and they said, well, you have to go out and sail first. So he was really in a unique situation. So he said, oh, fiddledy-dee, I'm going to go join the Army. Well, he took basic training at Fort Ord. He loved the training. He said, most people griped about the regimentation. I thought it was fabulous. Sometimes in the morning when they got you up, it was a pain. Other times, I was just having a real good time. His drill sergeant was a Sergeant Martin. He said, yep, he yelled at us. He did what he had to do, but I really idolized this man. He was the kind of soldier I wanted to be. He had been an airborne ranger in Korea. He was a black guy, Sergeant First Class Martin. Towards the end of our basic training, he let his guard down a little bit, and we sat around in the barracks talking about what it was to be a soldier and to fight in combat. This is what he said to me. Life is not what you think it is as a soldier. It's the worst thing you'll ever imagine. This is where you find out what people are really made of. And Mike Perkins said he was absolutely right. Now, Sergeant First Class Martin had been in an all-black airborne ranger company. He was often telling the men, we had to prove to those white boys that we're just as good as they were. And that left an impression on me about treating people fairly. He was such a good soldier and such a good example for us. I guess that's where I lost a lot of the color consciousness that people used to look at the world with. I really idealized that man. He was killed, sad to say, about 3 years later in Vietnam. He was an advisor with one of the Vietnamese Ranger units. I met a lot of good people in my life that told lots of stories. I remember Mr. Waters, who I used to work with when I was putting those Atlas missiles in. He had been a Marine lieutenant at Iwo Jima, and he was marked for life because of that. He always had that faraway stare. I used to ask Mr. Waters about it, and he'd say, I'd rather not talk about it, but I'll tell you it's not something human beings should be doing. My response to him was, but you're a man who stood up and defended this country. Mr. Waters said, yes, I'd do it again, but it's not something human beings should be doing. And he was right. But somebody has to stand up and do it. Mike Perkins, Captain, United States Army, Vietnam. There are so many stories like that, many, many more. And if ever you have an opportunity to be around a serviceman or servicewoman, you need to take the time to listen. Because they see things that hopefully you will never, ever see in your life. They feel things that hopefully you will never, ever feel in your life. And they often have to do things that hopefully you'll never have to do in your life. Don't label them. But if they want to talk sometime, be sure that you listen. Because they'll tell you things maybe you'll think it's fantasy. It isn't. It's for real. And usually they won't tell you all of it, just a portion. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. That's the number to call into. Oh, by the way, tomorrow is a T-Tap day. Yes, Teresa Tapp is coming on. Oh, we're going to have so many wonderful things to share with you. And physical fitness. This is what it's all about with 15 minutes a day, fit and fabulous. So we're going to be talking with Teresa, and I'm really looking forward to it. As those of you who listened in October know, I did broadcast from the retreat, and it was just wonderful, as it always is, to interact with the people who have accomplished so much for themselves. And just recently, I had a chance to be with one of her trainers, and it's just amazing the things that you learn. And if you've had a problem, if you're like me and you've got a genetic heritage that makes you strong and you're short and you have what's called a combo body and you go, oh, am I ever going to be able to lose this weight? Your body just works differently than let's say that somebody has a short torso, long legs, or a long torso and short legs or whatever. There's all these variables that come in, and Teresa is so knowledgeable about this. So we're going to be chatting about this and some other things that she's got going on, nutrition, all kinds of good information for you. Then on Friday, we're going to talk about Alzheimer's. Talking about disease is often something we don't want to get into, but I'll tell you what, I find it fascinating. The reason I find it fascinating is that there are so many hard-working, sincere people that want to solve the problems that these conditions bring. And we have known, I've had a number of clients that have had members of family that have had Alzheimer's. I was talking with a young woman just about a week ago. She's in her 30s. She's scared to death. She said, dementia runs in the family. I just am so concerned that it might affect me. And she's in her 30s, but she's worrying about what's going to happen to her in her 60s. All of these things are ignorance regarding Alzheimer's is quite strong. But if you know someone that needs to have an understanding about how to care for people who have Alzheimer's, my guest, Susan Kohler, is just a doll. She has been involved with Alzheimer's patients for a number of years, and she has some wonderful suggestions. This is a disease that has progressively been getting more and more attention, and we need to become educated about it. Well, we're all out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Happy Veterans Day to all of those of you who have served, and for the rest of you that have the day off, enjoy yourselves, because tomorrow you have to go back to work. And we'll be right back here, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.